And welcome, everybody, to YouTube Off the Hook Overtime, as the three of us, me, Kyle, and Alex, join you on YouTube. And Alex, are you there in Skype land?
I am indeed.
And you're,
I'm here.
You're monitoring to make sure we actually make it onto YouTube, right? And
it's not just YouTube. It's Channel 2600.
Channel 2600 on YouTube. That's, yeah. That's the elite portion of YouTube.
The best channel.
Yeah. There. It doesn't, yeah. It doesn't suck.
All right. I can confirm that we're on.
I was hearing myself. Why am I hearing myself? Do you hear that?
Yeah, it's pretty loud.
Okay. That must be you, Alex. That must be you.
You asked him to test it.
Yeah, but I didn't ask him to keep reverbing, did I?
That was us reverbing.
I didn't hear anything. I don't know. You guys might be hearing things.
Yeah, we might be hearing things.
This is annoying. When he makes us think we're crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
So another news.
Well, you know, Karina was really interesting. That was
so cool.
One of the best conversations I think we've had in a long time. And, you know, you never realize there are these people out there that are just doing amazing work. And this, tracking down oligarchs, I can't think of anything more important right now.
I got to say, the last 2 weeks of our shows, you know, last week we had Emma Best on from Distributed Denial of Secrets. This week we had, you know, Karina Shadrovsky from the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, tracking Russian assets around the world for years doing this. I mean, these are some seriously badass women that we've had on the show over the last 2 weeks. And I am just so chuffed to see the role that women are playing in information security and cybersecurity and whistleblowing and actively, affirmatively tracking Russian assets like this. I mean, it's really absolutely incredible. And I think I think we're in Women's History Month right now too, right? So I feel like these are two women on these last 2 weeks that really embody that. They are the personification of it because they are making history. And I'm proud that we were able to document that in some small measure over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's incredible the things that are being accomplished, and it's just it goes to show the power of the individual and just everybody pulling together.
Especially in a moment where there's just this confluence of so much stuff going on and making sense of it, figuring out how to respond in a crisis, a real crisis around the world, but with the skill and acumen, just real talent here. So it was just incredible conversations we've been having amidst all of this incredible, crazy, wild news.
Yeah, yeah. So if there's an oligarch in your neighborhood, tell people about it. You know, you can you can help. You can be a part of this whole justice league, I guess, is what we are forming here. OCCRP.org, Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. And all the information being pulled together is having an effect, a huge effect, just like everybody fighting against an invasion is having a huge effect. It's unbelievable. I really didn't expect things to be going, it's horrible to say this well for the Ukrainians, because it's a horrible situation that they're in. Their cities are being destroyed. So many people having their lives lost or destroyed in one way or another, but they still have their country and they are actually winning the battle at the moment anyway. Question is, what does Russia do next? I guess we'll have to keep paying attention. And we're doing that. We're watching all different sources of media, reading all kinds of reports, seeing how certain people react. And the whole thing is, it's fascinating and horrible at the same time.
And having these discussions.
Yeah,
With listeners out there, reading your letters at OTH@2600.com.
That's right.
It's all part of it, because we're building consensus and elevating consciousness one step at a time with this kind of back and forth. And it's how we like kind of hash out and process what we've witnessed collectively and what kinds of ideas we have for it going forward.
It helps. It does help to have these conversations. Alex, did you have something to say?
No, but I just got feedback from a colleague and good friend of mine who's listening to the show, and he said that for him, that was the best off the hook ever.
I would not dispute that. I would say that's quite possible because it was a really interesting discussion and very enlightening. Yeah. And it's something that I think people want to know more about. And it, dare I say, it might inspire people to do more on their own as well. That's what we're all about at BAI, in the hacker world, as individuals. And that's what our listeners are gravitate towards. Yes, Alex.
One thing we didn't touch on during Off the Hook, and I think we should touch on it now, is that when you're dealing with Russians, you're dealing with people who have been known to take out their adversaries in particularly horrific ways, in public ways. You look at what happened to Litvinenko in central London and the Millennium Hotel. You know, a place where I've stayed myself in London. You look at what is happening to Navalny. You look at what's happened to many of Putin's opponents. And I think we really have to acknowledge, too, that for Karina and all of her colleagues over, with the Organized Crime Reporting Project, there's a great deal of bravery that goes into putting your name associated with a project like that and just being out in the public saying, this is what we're doing. We're tracking you. We're watching you. We're watching your planes. We're watching your yachts. And we're going to take affirmative steps to make sure that everybody knows where they are and that they get seized, that you no longer can play with your luxurious toys. I mean, that takes some serious chutzpah.
And it's also interesting that not being able to play with your toys is the strategy of fighting back in this particular case. I think it's ingenious because that sort of that speaks to all of it. Because when rich people can't play with their toys, that's when they get really upset, and that's when they want to change whoever it is that pulls their strings. So I think it might seem like a real long game at the moment, but I think it will be an effective one.
I find it that it is a strategy that is jarring to those individuals because they've become sort of conditioned to this lifestyle and maintenance, the mm-hmm. cost of maintaining that. And it's, whatever whatever it takes to maintain it and have that associated prestige. But I will say there's nothing that billionaires hate more than fake billionaires.
Oh yeah.
So, true. It's not just the regular people that have been angered. It's the other people who feel their ill-got gains are valid or more valid. They don't like people faking it, mm-hmm. Making them look bad with their bigger yachts when they didn't legitimately have ill-got gains. And anyway, I'm just pointing out that in many ways, these individuals don't really have a right to that wealth or that lifestyle. And that has anchored, it just broadens and deepens that. And especially at the governmental levels, because they see their systems and it's all just laughed at as like paperwork and made a mockery, and it's not going to stand any longer. And these are, institutions from the very top to the bottom that are coordinating and having an impact.
Where I really hope the reaction comes from, a strong reaction, is the people of Russia, because they are the ones that can really affect change. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be quick, but they have so much. They have so much and such history, and getting rid of a jerk like Putin once and for all would be an incredible accomplishment. And of course, only the first step, because there is so much that needs to be done after that. But they don't deserve to be going through this. Imagine 15,000 of your brothers and sisters dying for nothing, for stupidity, for bravado. That's what we're looking at right now. And it's for a country that did nothing to you, except maybe insult the leader's pride a little bit. It's disgusting. It's so horrible.
To say nothing of brainwashing your own people into fighting for your unjust cause.
And that brainwashing continues. I mean, people still are quoting Russia Today talking points. We see it ourselves. They're both on the right and the left. You see people, accusing you of siding with I don't know what they accuse us of siding with, but basically not siding with Putin. They don't say that. They know that's not really a good selling point, but it's, we happen to be saying similar things, as far as pursuing justice and getting rid of an invader. And I think most people with a conscience would say something like that in that particular case. I'm not for war, you know, never am, but there are times when you have to fight back. This is one of those times. You know, what happened in former Yugoslavia, that was another one of those times. World War II, yeah. But, you know, all of it can be avoided. It's always a sign of failure when you're in that position in the first place. And we certainly have failed on many fronts, and this didn't have to happen. And, you know, we can go back decades to point to why it developed the way it did. But right now, you got to deal with what's in front of you. And what's in front of you is horror, and that has to stop. And what we talked about tonight, it's a great way to get that process going.
Yeah, it's like been years and years of nuance and, you know, playing games over you know, these little issues, these little sort of feuds and sociocultural things and misinformation here and these little fits and spurts, of course, having fake billionaires elected as our president, that kind of stuff has been a real thrill. But we know what it's really about now. And nobody's confused. I'm not. Mm-hmm. And yeah, criticize. I was just as anti-war when it was invading Iraq and Afghanistan. I didn't want that. It wasn't something I had control over, and I was resistant to it. I didn't want this war. I would prefer we weren't in other places fighting and not using the diplomatic systems. All that stuff I said is a mockery to the Russians or to autocrats around the world. Just a bunch of paperwork and appearances, you know, keeping up the facade of obeying the rules-based society we live in and doing whatever the hell you want elsewhere in reality. So, yeah, we get it. We know what it's about. And it's unfortunate to, you know, have to agree with your own government. I know that's terrible for left, you know left-leaning politics.
Kyle, they happen to agree with us.
I think that's what it is.
We would have reached this position no matter what they said. They happen to agree with us. And it happens, okay, you know, a broken clock's right twice a day, so occasionally that's going to happen. That should not be what decides how you land on the issue, what the government is saying.
Like I said, this ticks a lot of boxes for the government, but that's not where the people are coming from. They know, they've seen what has transpired. And the aims and ideological ends behind it, and it's not something people are going to put up with, and it is something that many nations are aligned very strongly right now in terms that would make your eyes water. Like, this is a critical moment for unity around the world.
Brian is one of our listeners. He's a software developer out in Portland, Oregon. And he wrote in with an interesting story. First of all, he said, I love all y'all. I've been listening for decades. Hope to be listening for a few more. Well, we hope to be doing it for a few more. But the story he sent in is fascinating. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but the developer of JavaScript library Node-IPC. It's used by the popular Vue.js framework. The developer deliberately introduced a critical security vulnerability that for some people on the net would destroy their computer's files. Yeah. Brandon Miller, who goes by the handle RIA Evangelist on GitHub, created Node-IPC, which is fetched about a million times a week from the NPM registry. And I don't understand half of what I'm saying right now, but I know a lot of people do. It's described as an inter-process communication module for Node supporting Unix sockets, TCP, TLS, and UDP, FYI. It appears Miller intentionally changed his code to overwrite the host system's data, then changed the code to display a message calling for world peace as a protest against Russia's invasion of Ukraine. GitHub on Wednesday declared this a critical vulnerability, tracked as CVE-2022-23812. The malicious code was intended to overwrite arbitrary files dependent upon the geolocation of the user IP address, according to GitHub. Between March 7th and March 8th, versions 10.1.1 and 10.1.2 of the library were released. When imported as a dependency and run by a project, These checked if the host machine had an IP address in Russia or Belarus, and if so, overwrote every file it could with a heart symbol. Version 10.1.3 was released soon after without this destructive functionality. 10.1.1 and 10.1.2 were removed from the NPN registry. Version 11 was then published, and the following week, version 9.2.2, both brought in a new package by Miller called Peace Not War, which creates files with love from America.txt in users' desktop and OneDrive folders. This text file is supposed to contain a message from the developer stating, among other things, supposedly contains this, war is not the answer no matter how bad it is, though some folks reported the file was empty. And that's because they had no soul. But regardless, whenever Node-IPC versions 11 or 9.2.2 are used as a dependency by another project, they bring in Peace Not War and run it, leaving files on people's computers. Version 9.2.2 has disappeared from the NPM registry, along with the destructive 10.1.x versions. Vue.js, for one, brought in Node-IPC 9.2.2 while it was available, as 9.x is considered a stable branch, meaning there was a period in which some Vue developers may have had .txt files show up unexpectedly. In other words, I welcome other words, not too many people fetched the destructive version, as big apps and frameworks will have used the stable branch, which for a short period dropped text files. Anyone using bleeding edge versions may have had their files vanished or found manifestos saved to their computers, which is exactly what will happen to you in Russia. You'll vanish, or you'll have manifestos thrown in your face. So consider it just a little, you know, warning there. Miller has defended his Peace Not War module on GitHub, saying, "This is all public, documented, licensed, and open source." I'm not sure if that's the right defense for this, but you know, I admire the sentiment and the passion.
Glad he's thought it through.
And the fact that you don't mind that you're throwing a hand grenade at yourself in some ways, but okay. Earlier, there were more than 20 issues flagged against Node-IPC about its bad behavior, and just now plenty more over on Peace Not War. Some of the comments referred to Miller's creation as protestware. Protestware, yeah. Others might call it malware. The programmer was not available for comment. But boy.
I like that.
You know, so much for software development being boring. It's not. People get their hands dirty. Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, it reminds me of that old adage that, you know, one man's protestware is another man's malware. You know, people have been saying that for hundreds of years.
Well, I like also this idea that we're familiar with in the cryptography world, that software is speech in some ways. You know, this is a way of doing that. I'd love to see more of this phenomena.
It's speech and it's a Molotov cocktail. It can be both.
Yeah.
Well, you know, also, it's a really interesting concept, you know, to recognize here, which is that the supply chain for any particular piece of software can incorporate so many other libraries, so many other functions, that you really never know who's going to creep up in your supply chain. But it also gets to this issue of, you know, when there is some kind of armed conflict here, you know, is it safe for the nations involved in an armed conflict to actually update their software? You know, this type of thing is going to discourage, let's say, Russians and Belarusians from updating and patching their software.
Yeah, but Alex, also we're facing all kinds of cyber attacks where we have to update things for security purposes. So what do you do?
Of course.
I also was thinking of that. Do you remember the story about the surveillance cameras where there was an overlay? That to me is, it's not a software package, but it's also, it's a form of protestware where you're exploiting vulnerability, but the payload is really just a message overlaid in the video pattern. But I love the idea that it's maybe getting a little bit more popular. And yeah, as you said, even if it does scare an adversary into not updating, that makes a lot of their software less or more vulnerable in some sense, right?
Yeah, and going back to what Karina was talking about earlier today with regard to sanctions and enforcing sanctions, this raises then the issue of, is it a sanctions violation to push out software updates to geographies like Russia?
And if it's your own software, I mean, you can do whatever you damn well please, right?
Well, there's export bans on certain types of software. I think that's what you're getting at, right, Alex?
Yeah, that's right.
Sanctions.
You know, does that constitute some kind of transaction?
Oh, I see.
More
so in this case, because it's not specific types of software like cryptographic export bans. This is like, you're a sanctioned country. You may not get any high-tech anything. No chips for you. No nothing for you, including updates from whatever this module is, you know. I see what you're saying.
How many people in Belarus do you think got that particular patch? I mean, I don't know. Maybe quite a few. Certainly a number in Russia must have.
But I mean, think about this. I mean, think about if this invasion had happened several years earlier and sanctions regimes were viewed or interpreted to encompass software updates, especially things like operating system updates. What if Russia and Belarus were stuck using Windows 7 forever?
Well, there's worse things.
No, there's a very high likelihood that they will be stuck in that situation. That's kind of what I meant when we were talking, where there's a lag. This stuff has been introduced. It is now on the table, but it is only in the interim, this lag period, and in the intervening year, maybe 2 years, where the effect is their software is getting old. So it is, sure, as of now, just like it was last month. That may not be noticeable, but in the intervening time, that risk it explodes. It becomes a much more vulnerable surface as novel techniques, things that have been audited in some way and reworked, that stuff then it becomes necessary to function. Or in some cases, the vendors themselves have pulled out. I think Oracle was one. A lot of the vendors. So they may still be using databases or proprietary systems from those vendors, but those systems may not, even now, maybe immediately, but or maybe after that intervening time, they may in immediate ways not have certain ports or certain telemetrics and so forth to function in the way they're intended to, patched or not. So there's a lot of implications to this.
Do you think Russian tanks get software updates?
Well, that's a little different. That's a whole.
I'm just thinking outside the box here. But you know, if they got wireless, updates, or even had to plug in to get one.
Well, a lot of the tanks specifically are very old.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that are experts on the weapons that are going on right now, and I've been going through some of the comments on the weapons tracking social media accounts, and some of the systems are really, really valuable as far as allied nations being curious about how electronic warfare systems are working that mm-hmm. the Russians have deployed. You know, those are now kind of on the battlefield, kind of waiting to be picked up and examined in other places. That's a hazard of this yard sale of a war.
Well, yeah, that's we're having this conversation the other day where we're basically, I was theorizing that maybe the whole purpose of Russia doing this right now is to be able to sample some of the Western technology that's being used against them, because how would they ever have that opportunity otherwise? Maybe in Syria, but I can't really think of any other platform or any other theater where there would be Russian or Soviet military equipment up against things from Western Europe or the United States, where, you know, occasionally something will be captured and then brought home and examined.
It is so true. You're absolutely right. And that is both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides are
yes,
very interested.
Both
if you
ways.
Want to look at this without the human element at all, and you just say this is military industrial complex going at it with a sort of pseudo, a real war game, but really just, you know, getting all the old stuff out, blowing up all the stuff that's going to expire anyway, getting all those expired MREs, you know, whatever, digested or not, out of the storage and onto the battlefield in this fine display we've all witnessed. But it is also a prime reason that NATO and allied nations are only going to deploy like ground weapons, maybe these sort of more advanced javelins that maybe they can be disabled or otherwise kind of wiped remotely, or maybe there's aspects of the newer stuff that they don't really mind getting out there, or it's known enough that if someone takes it apart, it's like, it's already old enough that we're going to develop something more advanced. There's probably a lot of different things that are thought through with that, but it's also the reason why it is the you have to make a decision as to, like, okay, do you want the latest and greatest American weapons or allied NATO nations systems that could fall into hands? It's just as risky as putting like an American battalion or NATO troops in direct proximity. They don't belong there in the first place. Their equipment could become a blowback that is used in subsequent conflicts, and it's a real calculation and consideration in this particular case.
Alex, we have a phone call, but go ahead and we'll get to the phone call after.
I was literally going to say, I thought we were taking phone calls during
this. Well, we didn't get out the phone number. Somehow we have a phone call, even though we didn't get out the phone number. But the phone number is 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Greetings. This is Kirby from Etobicoke.
Oh, hey. It's up in Canada, right?
Yeah, what a difference a couple of weeks makes, eh?
Yeah, you don't have those angry convoy drivers we do now.
I suppose they've driven to the Ukrainian border to fight the people that are threatening their freedom.
Yeah, that's a real freedom convoy. these guys, I don't think they have the stomach for that. But no, what we have is a bunch of angry truck drivers driving around the Beltway in Washington, D.C. It's a road that basically goes around Washington, D.C. in a circle. They won't go into the city. They believe the city somehow is a foreign country. I don't know what that means. But they just keep driving around. They get frustrated at the traffic because there's always traffic on the Beltway. And I guess they thought they were going to bring the traffic, but they didn't realize the traffic was already there. I listen to them on the radio, and I hear them talking amongst themselves, but they don't really seem to be accomplishing anything.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I hear you. So how's everybody doing?
Oh, you know, we're getting by. We're doing okay. Working on a bunch of stuff and trying not to go too crazy watching the news.
Yeah, I know. I got my ticket to the convention, and
oh, awesome!
You're coming.
Yeah, we're gonna fly down there. Excellent. And I've been talking to Mitch. I might get involved with some of the events.
That'd be great. Yeah, you know, we encourage everybody to get as involved as you possibly can. Because that's more fun than anything. Attending is great, but actually participating and helping to build and create and just try out new ideas. We're in a brand new space. We have all this acreage that we can play with, and it's basically our first get together in 4 years. So it's really going to be a magical environment.
And for me, it's not that big of a deal. Like, we have a international airport, mm-hmm. which is about, I don't know, 25 minutes away. And then we have a downtown airport.
Oh, wow.
And both of them have an airplane. I mean, it's faster than me going, you know, across town. It's about an hour.
Wow. So, I mean, you can just fly and land in either, well, I guess maybe not LaGuardia, but Kennedy. And
which one does... The downtown airport flies to not the main airport to... Newark, is that right?
Yeah, Newark.
Yeah, Newark's a little further away, but JFK is right down the road.
The way they put it is you got to take an Uber here or you got to take an Uber there.
Yeah, if you do Uber or Lyft, it's really simple as far as just getting from one place to another. But we have buses too.
Well, anyways, I'm looking forward to it, and the reason I do mention it is because I was emailing, and Mitch emailed me back, and I just figured, you know, the more people to get involved, the better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's so crucial.
I really don't think this is going to be a room full of people watching somebody. I think it's going to be a room full of people doing things.
Yes. A few rooms of people doing things.
I was thinking
about... exactly.
It's so funny you mentioned that. I was thinking about the other day, and it's really these self-organized and self-directed stuff that outnumbers the things that we organize. I mean, we do our tracks and we have the information and stuff. We have activities around that, but we end up just trying to organize and get people aware of all the activities, because once we're underway, we have lightning rounds, we have workshops, we have so many different things that people are kind of that emerge at the event, that people are posting like last minute, hey, come check this out, I want to tell you about my thing or this organization or this idea I have for some software, whatever it is. We're really just trying to get people aware of it once the things are underway, because so much is going on at Hope.
Yeah, and basically we'll be able to do things we weren't able to do at previous conferences. We can assign rooms to various projects, and that'll be their room for the weekend. And people can come and go and participate in all these different activities in addition to the talks and just the overall atmosphere.
No, it sounds fantastic. I mean, a university campus or some aspect of it, the vibe is already different. You know, the whole thing is just... And the fact that it's the first time, that's the best part.
Yeah. It's like resetting the clock. You know, we're kind of like going back to the beginning and just rebooting Hope. And it's going to be cool, but it's going to be very, very different. And, you know, we're sad that the hotel is being demolished. We fought like hell to prevent that from happening.
Multiple times.
Even after we left the hotel, because, you know, we left because they just jacked up their prices. But then it just sort of rebounded on them, and COVID hit, and then their owners got super greedy. And now it's going to turn into this sterile office tower, and it's going to be awful. Alex, did you have something to add?
You guys would have been 105. You guys would have been 105 fighting for the hotel.
Absolutely.
Why not?
Every last breath.
Somebody's got to.
Go ahead, Alex.
Well, no, but yeah, the thing is, though, I think now the opportunities outweigh the legacy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not the legacy, but the history, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm very sentimental. I'm very sentimental with physical things, with objects, with artifacts.
Right.
As you know from the past, I work in museums and stuff, and sometimes I go down to the museum and volunteer with a meteorite just to see visitors and to show them something and say, how old do you think this is? And they say, well, no, it's 4.5 billion years old, you know.
Wow.
What, you want to touch it? And you know, it's just like that object creates this, it bridges that gap between concept and reality.
You know, when you said visitors, I thought you meant the meteorite.
Oh, that too.
That's a certain, you know, it synchronicity there. It kind of...
For sure.
We feel the same way about the hotel, but it is this idea, Hope as an idea that we're bringing with us, and also the people. That idea and the individuals that make up our attendees and volunteers and so forth, and speakers, that's also a maddening, I guess, variety and amount of support and that history that's coming with us to this new space. So we're as kind of upset or broken up about it, but it's this new possibility, this new hope that I think it's going to get us over that quickly and realize these new memories we're going
to
make.
Alex, I know you've been trying to say something for a while. Go ahead.
Well, two things. Now I want to say not just one thing, but two things. Actually, by the way, speaking of meteorites, I don't know if you know, but my wedding band is actually made of meteorite with the Widmanstätten pattern on it, and it's encased in palladium. So really, you know, kind of neat and very unique wedding band that I have.
But wow, you just took a meteorite. Huh? What's for the anniversary? Dinosaur bones?
Well, no, we use those in the car. What the hell was I going to say? Oh yeah, about Hotel Pennsylvania. So as many people know, I like to cycle into my office when I get into the office, and I had a problem with my bike in the axle in the back over the last couple of days that I had to get fixed. So I was walking in, and I made the deliberate choice to walk past Hotel Pennsylvania as I was heading up. And the demolition has started. The whole thing is fenced off now. There's porta potties lined up. You can only see into the lobby through this fence. And if you go down 33rd Street, heading east from 7th Avenue, you will see that, you know, every few minutes, people are coming out the side of the hotel with these massive dumpsters. You know, what I guess, you know, our British colleagues would call skiffs. And it's just tons of rubbish that they're throwing out now. So the hotel is being emptied out. It is actively being demolished. It was really sad to see that twice in one day.
You're saying the structure itself is being demolished, not just what's inside?
Well, not the structure itself yet.
Okay.
Not the structure itself yet.
I think they have to gut it first. They have to gut it first. They have to get all the like drywall, all the fixtures and wood panels, anything like that. Then once it's just like this superstructure, then they'll implode it or wrecking ball it or both.
Real tragedy. Really sad.
I find in Toronto there's been a lot of that too. Obviously, like we had this explosive growth where, there's an announcement that a building is going to be torn down. It's like down in 3 days, kind of thing. Like,
wow.
They'll probably leave
and
one
then they're
wall.
Like, oh yeah, we'll pay the fee. We'll pay the fine, right? We'll pay the $400,000 or whatever because they're going to build an 80 story skyscraper there or something.
Yeah, they'll probably keep like one wall standing for tax, historic status.
No, we're going to get a plaque. We're going to get a plaque out here for the
whole, we'll have a plaque.
The whole history of the hotel will be summed up in a plaque on a wall that's probably inside an office building that you won't be allowed in.
They'll remove just a just enough to not to keep it somewhat historic. And then the rest will just be brand new and like skyrides into outer space, I guess.
Yeah, so. It's sad. But you know what?
We're moving on
with hope.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Very important. Very important.
Mm-hmm.
I promised that I would give a shout out to Oddball.
Okay.
She's been in virtual school for 2 years, and she's doing a really great job. And hello, and we love you.
Awesome.
Very cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you. Look forward to seeing you at Hope. And please spread the word because we want as many people as possible to experience the magic.
All right, gang.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Y'all take care.
All right. That's our call from Canada, from the Toronto area, I believe.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Kirby.
Yes, yes. Thanks very much. Our phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. And it's your chance to say hi to us and share whatever you're doing and ask questions or make statements or things like that. We're not on next week, so this is pretty much your last chance until April. Think about that. We have a call? Okay. Let's take that. You got it? You don't have to press one anymore, do you?
No.
What, Google got rid of that?
They just quietly fixed it.
I love how Google just quietly gets rid of things.
Well, then they don't have to admit they made any kind of mistake.
They never admit they do anything
wrong.
They
can tell you are a bad user.
They'll reconfigure and say, you have to come with us and do that. You know, everyone is always, I'm sorry, go off on a tirade here. Everyone is always praising Google for their spam filter. You know, they always say, what a great spam filter. It gets rid of all the spam. You know, it also gets rid of a lot of the mail. Okay. Go through your spam folder every now and then, and you will be amazed at the things that are in there that you want to read. For instance, if you buy something from a store that you've bought something from before, it wound up in spam for some reason. You know, it shouldn't have gone there. It should have gone directly to you. I have forwarded mail from one of my Shell accounts onto one of my Google accounts, Gmail accounts, and it was labeled as spam. Me, it comes from the recovery address of the Gmail account, and it's labeled as spam. So, yeah, you know what? It does get rid of the spam, but it gets rid of so much more. And I would rather, false negatives than false positives. Did I get that right? Yeah, I'd rather get spam than have my real mail disappear.
Because you are still that last layer of filter.
Something like that. Yeah, I want to be able to read my mail, okay?
Instead of it filtering more than you would like it to.
Yeah, yeah. So please, if you have a Gmail account, look in your spam box. I think you'll be surprised. Alex?
I've read a lot of mail that you've written from that Shell account. I just want to say Google might have been right.
Oh, wow. See, this is what happens. It just gets into people's brains.
That was really low.
Yeah, but that's what it does.
I can't believe you said that like on YouTube. That's like the nastiest thing
forever.
And on channel 2600, no less.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I have a few more things to say, but we have a caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes. Could you turn on the button? You're now distorted. Remember how I used to complain that nobody can hear you? Now it's too loud. So you got to turn the level down distorted.
Hold on a second. How come the levels look good, Kyle? And people tell us we're distorted. Where should I be looking at the levels? Because they're fine here, they're fine there, and they're fine over there. Is there a fourth place I have to look at the levels? You're not answering me. You're just looking at a screen.
In the streamer, I had boosted them after Rebel complained about it.
Was it too high? Wait, you boosted them after the same person complained about it?
In the software streamer,
and now he's complaining that it's too high.
Is it better now?
Is it better now, Rebel?
In the middle of the show, it was... it's going to confuse me if I...
You'll have to hang up on the computer. Well, okay, but...
I just wanted to let you know that. But about the Google thing with the voice, it still cuts you off. Like it says, you know, it gives you like maybe through four or five rings, then it says, you know, with your voice saying this is really a busy signal. It really should give you more rings. It's like the 9X thing. Remember when they used to cut you off after a certain amount of rings?
Well, I remember when they didn't. I remember when you'd be able to ring a phone all weekend.
When they didn't, too. Yeah. But, you know, on that subject, you know what I think would be really... you know, like when you called a cell phone, it used to say, please enjoy the music while your party is reached or something like that. They'd play music. Like instead of you hearing the phone ring, like not the, the person calling the cell phone, they'd hear music instead of a regular ring. Remember that?
I believe so. That's something I don't really remember.
But what I think would be interesting, why can't we make our own thing so I could have like an old like crossbar ring or step switch ring? Like instead of hearing music, you hear a step ring, like, you know, things like that.
Right. I'm sorry. We're trying to fix the levels now. So now you got us distracted. So you're going to have to talk for a little bit.
Alex here. That was a great impression that you gave over there. I still think that we were really onto something last week when the suggestion arose. I don't recall from whom it came, but that we dedicate an entire hour, 45 minutes or so, to you, doing your impressions of various rings and switches. I think you've got such an incredible repertoire. We'd love to hear more of this.
Okay, of course I'll be at the Hope Conference, so, and I live right, like, a couple of miles away, so it's going to be convenient for me to get there.
Yeah, what other impressions can you get, can you do?
I mean, I have tapes, remember, I have tapes from, like, years ago that I, when you used to call long distance, like on a crossbar, and the crossbar that I was on, you know, when you asked to dial the last digit, it would go, ding, ding.
Wow. Yeah.
And then start ringing.
Can you do a human red box by any chance?
A human what?
He's asking you to do a human red box. Can you do that?
Oh, a red box.
Can you imagine someone just tuning in now?
What?
You're so good at that.
Yeah, you really are. Rebel, can you whistle 2600?
Actually, no. I wish I could.
Okay, no, not everybody can. Not everybody can.
Admitting what you can't do, that's a strength.
We can't all be Kevin Mitnick, you know?
No, you can't.
You know, you can't do...
So, Rebel, you're from Queens, right?
Yeah.
You must be thrilled that Hope is in your backyard now.
Yeah, it's going to be really easy for me to get there, and, you know, I'll, do things, and I really hope there's going to be old computers there.
Well, if there are people that we'll talk to the vintage computer people. I imagine they'll be there, and we can set up a whole big thing.
Like terminals and things like that, like mm-hmm. old, like, maybe we could set up a network, a couple of, like, you know, text terminals or like text, like data entry terminals.
Someone can wheel in a UNIVAC, you know, why not?
You don't even need that. You need a Raspberry Pi or something. You hook it up to the internet or something. I don't know.
Oh, wow. That's that and the UNIVAC, those two things together. But we'll be bringing in our phone booth and our phone van and all that kind of thing. And I imagine a lot of other people.
Booth? You have a phone booth?
We have a 1950s phone booth, yes. It's been a while, hasn't it?
1950s or 60s? No, I like, how about the 1970s or 60s or
Well,
70s
you'll be disappointed. This is from the 1950s, rotary dial, and it works.
Oh, and what about the coin first? Remember the coin first one where you had to put the dime in before you get the dial tone?
This would be one of those. It doesn't ding, you know, like on television with the bell, but it's close.
Also, I'd like to talk about scam calls. I've been getting, you know, of course I know, you know, all the tricks that people, you know, the people call from like different phone numbers from around the country, different area codes and different numbers.
Right.
And they even call from like my number, like they'll call from 917 number that's, you know, and then the same exchange, but it's, you know, not, you know, it's somebody with an Indian voice saying, would you like Medicare? Would you like to do this? Or I'm from the Student Loan Forgiveness Center. Of course, I don't have a student loan. Okay. But then when you try and call the number, you don't get anything.
Yeah, and what's happening there is a caller ID is being spoofed and basically replaced with a number from your exchange to make you pick up thinking it's a neighbor, but it's actually somebody from anywhere.
Yeah, but how do people in overseas make phone calls? Don't they have to pay for these phones? Are they just using voice over IP?
Of course they're using voice over IP. Why would they not use that? It's that's the we talk to people all around the world and don't pay a penny for it. So, you know, everyone is using the system to do that, and they figured out a way to spoof caller ID.
So wait, is there a way I can call a number in, like, you know, other countries and not have to, I mean, using voice over? I mean, because Google Voice doesn't work. I mean, you're not... You know, the Google Voice doesn't really make any phone calls. Maybe you used to be able to make phone calls on Google.
Right. There are ways. I don't at the moment know them because I don't make that many phone calls overseas, but I know people are able to do it.
Yeah, they have like a way you can fund your Google Voice account and they charge you international rates. I think they're comparable to like, I mean, they're okay. They give you, you can look through the list of all of them, but it's similar to like what you'd see on a mobole phone plan now, like 7 cents or 10 cents. I don't know
Who would do that when you could just FaceTime or the equivalent, you know, and that doesn't cost anything.
Or use WhatsApp
or Signal, Signal phone call.
Maybe I'm thinking of an older version and they don't do that anymore. But it seems they wanted to be able to like sort of allow you to dial out from Google Voice.
I just assume that it's relatively simple to call anyone anywhere, pretty much.
That's using a plain
system. When I had the a number of one of the scam calls, I made a video actually, and I on my cell phone I could do like conference calling, like I could put one person on hold and then call another again, and then put them on hold and conference them in, and then take those two people and then conference another one in. I've done this, and they were like talking to each other and.
Well, that's good. That's
fun. Would you like me to demonstrate?
You know what? We're running out of time, Rebel. This is our last week for 2 weeks. So we'll let our imagination carry us there. Any other thoughts for us, though, before we open up to another call?
Not really. Let's see. So it'd be interesting to have a ring on your cell phone that sounds like, you know, that you can make yourself instead of, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I've got some I'm working on my phone, my handset from that I'd used previously that we talked about, some of those interval signals.
Interval signals are great.
Those are fun, but yeah, it's too complicated. It should be easier to compose and to customize, certainly with ringtones.
Yeah, yeah. I'm having trouble with ringtones on I use Signal. For some reason, Alex, whenever you message me on Signal, I'm supposed to get a certain tone, but you just get a little beep. And I don't know why that is, because I assign one ringtone to any Signal call that I get or a Signal message. But for some reason, it doesn't apply to Alex. I don't know why that is.
Haven't you done that twice and it doesn't seem to retain it?
It retains it for most people.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I've never sent you a message on Signal. That's not me.
And if it takes me a long time to respond, it's because you just have a little beep and it's hardly audible. All right. But everybody else has like a symphony orchestra that I hear no matter where I am. And I quickly answer them. So it's not personal. It's just for some reason, the Signal doesn't like you.
I don't know.
Wait, now how does the Signal work? I never heard of it. Can you,
Signal is just basically a way of sending secure text messages and occasionally making phone calls. It's encrypted, and it's an app.
It's
an app.
Like WhatsApp. It's like WhatsApp.
It's better than that.
It's a messaging app that runs on top of your phone's OS and sort of interacts with your messaging and stuff, but also puts this sort of end-to-end encryption on top of it so that you can trust that your messages are not being intercepted.
Yeah, you can have a desktop client as well. You can do things like set messages to expire where they'll disappear after a certain amount of time, or you can archive them. It doesn't cost anything to call somebody. That's why I say if you're in a different part of the world, it should be easy to call somebody if they have a Signal account.
Now, Signal account, do you have to give them your phone number? You have to link your phone number with it?
It does just for the SMS specific functionalities. I believe you do not necessarily need a phone number to connect to communicate with somebody if they're on Signal. Is that true? Or actually, I think you need some kind of number to have an account, whether desktop or mobile.
Well, you need a phone.
Yeah, because you're using the phone system. So no, you need a phone number of some sort that you have access to. I don't know, Alex, you might know more about this, but you don't need phone service to use it in the way we're talking about, right, Alex?
I think that's correct. I think you can use a phone that's just connected to the internet to do this.
Like, could you use a Google Voice number for Signal?
And, that I don't know about. That I haven't tried. Right?
You know what I'm saying? Like, not an actual
The idea is to give as little information to any of these companies as you possibly can and still be able to use their services.
I'm sure you could do it with a SIM, like a prepaid number.
Uh-huh.
So all the same, maybe on a different handset or you have a dual SIM handset, something like that. There's a lot of possibilities for what you give this program.
But I think this would be a good workshop at Hope for people to just figure out ways of doing this.
Yeah. What's your favorite end-to-end software program, or what kinds of ways and cool ways are people using these things? Because it's one thing to have, the capability and stuff, but what kinds of things, how are you making it work for you? We're always interested in that. So it's a good question.
Is there a way to make, like, on my PC, I have, my earphones here. I have my headphones, which I could plug in and adds the microphone for my cell phone, but I could also plug it into my PC because it has an earphone jack. Is there a way to make my computer a phone? Make phone calls from my computer? Is there like any app or program or something?
A fax modem?
No, not
or,
fax
or a
modem,
software
but I mean, like,
modem or something that you could dial from your computer, right? I mean, those are capable of interacting with phone lines, but I don't know. There's probably sort of unified communications tools, or I think you're describing is like a software phone that would dial out from your PC, right? I mean,
kind of like what Google Voice does or used to do,
right? Yeah, I mean, getting one that's customizable, that's not a part of one of those services, you might not have as much luck. A lot of the emphasis for developing that, as I was sort of throwing out unified communications, a lot of that went into voice over IP. People getting SIP, direct dial, DIDs, I don't know what the terms are. Also something I haven't set up and explored myself. But a lot of that customization was stuff people wanted, running their own PBX or switching, using FreeSwitch or some of the other packages out there. Because it allowed that machine to both be a PBX, but also you could program it with a IP phone and use it to dial out with whatever phone lines or VoIP system you have.
Rebel, it's been delightful conversing, and we look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Okay.
All right, take care. All right, open up for one more phone call, because we've been on almost an hour on overtime. 802-321-4225. Can I bitch about something? Because this has been bugging me last week or so.
Yes.
We're talking about services and not giving out personal information as much as you can, and having to do without, as the oligarchs are learning. I've been kicked off of Facebook. Do you know this? Yeah, for no reason. No reason at all. The only reason is that apparently I'm a target, or that's how they described it. They say I have an account that could be targeted by hackers. So they basically said, you have to have this particular protection on your account, something called Facebook Protect. It's like the mob coming in and saying, you need protection from us, otherwise something bad could happen. A notice was sent to selected accounts, and I'm one of the selected accounts, deemed at particular risk from hackers, telling them to enable an enhanced security feature called Facebook Protect. This happened last Thursday, actually. I didn't know about it until Sunday because I don't really look at Facebook. I tell people this all the time. And the thing is, sometimes I like to see what's, you know, what somebody's up to, or I also use it to tie into Facebook Messenger because that allows my old Trillion application to be able to get instant messaging, just like the days of AIM. But none of that works if I can't log into Facebook. All right. So anyway, I was given a few choices on what I could do. Problem is, it doesn't work. And people are complaining about this. There was a story in a few newspapers. New York Post is the one I'm looking at right now. They say many people thought that the original message was a scam and they ignored it. Yeah, I ignored it. I ignore anything I get from Facebook. This came from security at facebookmail.com. It just didn't seem very legitimate. After the deadline of March 17th passed, users were told they had to switch on Facebook Protect to get in. But those who went ahead with it claim the setup system is broken. I'm claiming the same thing. They're still locked out. Yeah, I can't get into my damn account. The authentication tools, such as a text message to prove that it's you, are not working. One user said, I got locked out from Facebook indefinitely today because I didn't respond to emails from Facebook that looked like a scam about its new Facebook Protect system, which I was required to enable by today. So far, the text and security key options don't work. Someone else complained on Twitter saying the Facebook Protect thing is so annoying because it's not letting me turn it on and I need Facebook for work. So I'm really hoping Facebook fixes the stupid code. As of today, they have not done that. They haven't fixed it. It's super annoying. It's super. So I'm not being, you know, annoying by not responding to people. I'm sorry. I can't get in. And I don't know how much I really care about this.
You showed me this today. It's so funny because two-factor authentication has been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like they're kind of late to the party on this and finally getting around to it.
They might have had it before. I don't know. I didn't use it because I didn't really care that much.
I think they're ramping up their efforts. You're right. It is probably more the case that they have had this for quite some time. It just had not been adopted because no one really took, securing their Facebook account as seriously, which is probably healthy. You shouldn't, be so sort of dependent on it. But at the same time, now they're saying, okay, yeah, we really want to know that these accounts we've identified are secured in this way. And we're going to encourage you by making it sort of required. So in this way, though, you showed me exactly how this worked. And I don't know, it is so simple in many other web-based service providers. Mm-hmm. You click something, you choose what you want. We went through it, picked an authenticator, as we've done in other situations, setting up this kind of authentication. And it basically accepted the authenticator and went forward.
Should have worked.
Only to a certain point, though. Mm-hmm. It was set up with that. And then as soon as it wanted to sort of take you away from that setup for the authenticator, you're right back at the, hey, you need to have Facebook Protect.
I got
page.
The 6-digit code that changes once a minute, and I entered that code, and I said, whoops, something went wrong. We don't know what it is. We're working on fixing it. And I imagine that's the same message that's been spewed out for the last week. So, you know, I might be able to get around this just by having them SMS me on an actual phone number. Facebook doesn't have any of my phone numbers, and I don't want them to have any of my phone numbers, and I'm not going to give them any more personal information. So we're kind of at a standoff here. I think this is kind of a phishing attempt on Facebook's part to get more information from me, and they're not getting it. Not like that. So other options are what I'm going to be using until, I give up on them entirely. Alex, do you have anything to contribute?
Coincidentally, there was a proposal last week from something called FIDO, the Fast Identity Online Alliance. They published a white paper outlining their proposed web authentication changes that would do away with passwords entirely. Just, you know, done with the password. And, a lot of people are not so sure about all of this, but you know, it's an interesting proposal, and a lot of people have been talking about this over the past week, that this FIDO Alliance may be onto something, and we may finally see passwords become a thing of the past.
Okay, but you know, you're not going to see stupidity become something of the past. So as long as humans are involved somewhere, it's always going to be a security hole.
Yeah, even if it's the next, like, the solution, the next thing that we got to do, migrating from whatever's not working now itself will be a challenge. But it's certainly a hopeful development. I haven't heard nearly enough about that either. So it's good that there's some sort of possibilities there.
Let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yeah, the world's running out of IP addresses, and banks still give out four-digit passcodes. I don't think we're getting off the passwords anytime soon. Greetings from a guy who's no longer in the Beijing Olympic bubble.
Oh, wow. It's our friend who was in Beijing for the Olympics. And, oh, wow, that was such a fascinating series of calls from you.
Oh, yeah, it's been great. And I got to say, I've been listening since I've been back. I'm back a month as of today. You guys have been rocking it with the last couple of weeks of radio. Have just been some of the best radio I've heard in a long, long time.
Well, thank you. That means a lot to us.
We really appreciate the sentiment. Thank you. We were working really hard to keep things going, keep interesting stuff and discussion going, and technical stuff intact here. So appreciate the comment.
So how's it been since you got back? Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
How's it been since you got back?
It's been good. I've taken it really easy. At home as long as I could, but I'm back on the road. I'm doing some compliance work. The Beijing story really became the Ukraine story.
Mm-hmm.
The flight path that I took out of China was over Russia. That's no longer an option into France. Spent my last night before coming home in Paris and watching the coverage there. I left Europe a day and a half before there was war in Europe again.
Wow.
And it was just really, really kind of mind-blowing.
Uh-huh.
Watching it covered in a different language, but understanding along with what's going on, how Europe was seeing this, and then looking at the coverage at home. I was at an international hotel in Paris, and I was able to watch news coverage from all over the world, including Russia, while I was there. It's really just watching the difference in coverage across the world.
Uh-huh.
On all of these subjects. It's just amazing.
Were there any that stood out in particular? I imagine you probably had access to Russia today, which you probably wouldn't be able to get access to now, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I know they suspended their operations in the U.S. on their own a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
but they did have an international channel. But I have no idea. I doubt you could still get them in Paris. I did have it. It was just, you know, Russia Today was talking about the military operation. Everybody else really seemed to be focusing on it. You know, France had decided just a couple days beforehand that, you know what, the U.S. intelligence was right. They're going in. Russia's definitely got all intentions on going in. Watching their coverage, the thing that shocked me the most is that Vladimir Putin would have his name spelled differently in French. It's Poutine, as if you're getting a dish in Canada.
Really? Are you sure they weren't just they weren't just making a joke on the network? Or?
I don't think they were. It was across all the different coverages.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then I decided to get away from the news and go look at the Eiffel Tower because it's going to be a while before I get back to Europe.
Yeah, no, that was a good move. Definitely, that was a good idea.
Yeah, I drank some wine, you know, it was good.
Uh-huh. Well, Paris is amazing. I miss it so much. And you know, as
it
far
is.
As...
I really can't wait to go back.
Spellings of names. Zelensky, I see sometimes with one Y, sometimes with two Ys. It differs depending on where you're watching or how much research the people do.
Yeah, so one of while we were in Beijing, one of the reporters our agency had with us was not a sports reporter. He's an international reporter. And a few days into this whole Ukraine situation, he started talking about maybe having to leave early and go there. His original intention was to stay a little bit after the Olympics, get out of the bubble and, you know, go about the city as long as the visa was good.
Uh-huh.
But the world changed on him, and he's now he made it through the Olympics, but he's now on the he's on the front lines. Really, he's been in Poland, he's been into the Ukraine areas, he's been outside of Belarus. It's just amazing to hear the places this guy's covering.
So now he was a reporter or he wasn't a reporter?
Oh, no, he's a reporter. He's not a sports reporter.
He's not a sports reporter. Okay, what was it his idea to go there, or was he assigned to that area?
It was kind of a mutually agreed-upon situation. Uh-huh. You know, the agencies, it's a very loose thing. You know, they're either, you know, full assigned, or they're freelancers, or they're dedicated freelancers, but international yeah. reporters are all over the place, and there's a ton for agencies all over the West that are right up in involved in this whole thing, covering it from the inside, getting out, using satellite phones to communicate back, using satellite internet because services are disrupted there.
Right, right.
We've been asked to if we still had some of the burner phone SIM cards that we could send forward because they'd really like to use them there because our international plans are in short supply out there.
Interesting. Wow. Now, you've been traveling quite a bit, and you've been able to, working in the media yourself, but also watching the media. Is there any particular outlet that you think did a particularly good job as far as coverage of this?
You know, with language and translation and all that, I really do think, you know, the Western staples seem to have done a pretty decent job trying to frame the Ukrainian situation. I find, you know, in China, there was almost no coverage of it.
Well, it didn't happen while you were still in China, right? It happened right after the Olympics.
Right, right. But I mean, you turn on CNN International and they're talking about a buildup of forces. And,
right.
You know, you go to China, CCTV, and they're talking about what the favorite food of the Olympic athletes were.
Of course.
Yeah. You know, crop reports or something like that, you know.
And when it's like watching the Today Show all the time or something like that.
It is. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've seen the Don't Look Up movie, but if you did, there's a part where the American chat show, the morning chat show, just can't take anything seriously, and they just keep trying to keep it light and keep it light.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of the thing on China's news. Even the death and destruction type things, it's like keep it as light as possible.
As irrelevant as possible. That's pretty much what they're after.
Yeah, if it's like, you know, if it's watered down, people accept it.
Well, and that's not untrue as well. I mean, people, you know, want escapist fare, which is unfortunate. It's how these things happen in the first place. But I know Kyle and I have been doing a lot of monitoring of media, and the ones that we have found that are pretty accurate and, you know, intelligent and provide the best coverage, I think. CNN International, not domestic, CNN International, sometimes domestic as international, which is good, but not all the time. If you ever see, you know, someone's name at the bottom, you know, as if the name is more important than what you're watching, it's probably not that good. But it shouldn't be focused on that. BBC World News, Euronews is really good. Al Jazeera English, France 24,
for their
and Deutsche Welle from Germany.
For their exceptional French irreverence, France 24 has honorable mention.
Yeah, and you can get that on YouTube. They have a live feed on YouTube. So if your cable company doesn't carry these things, you can find most of them, you know, on a Roku or something.
But France 24.
Well, I'm angling to going to at least one more Olympic Games, so I'm committing to learning French by the time I have to go there. So maybe I'll start watching their news.
They're great, and they're always had a soundbite of just humorous soundbite of Ukrainian soldiers. One morning, a soldier remarked that he was going to multiply the Russians by zero. And there was another soundbite of a young soldier showing like the javelins and rocket propelled grenades, and he said, "Look. See our gifts. These are the gifts we have for the Russian invaders. Come to our country. Come visit us. We'll welcome you with these."
Oh, boy. I don't know how they keep that sense of humor.
The revolution wouldn't be televised, but it's going to be streamed as like crazy, and the memes are going to be really tasty.
This might not have been clear. When we were saying these networks, including France 24, they're all in English. So you don't have to learn a foreign language. They all have really good English coverage.
Okay.
Did you have something, Alex?
Oh, no, I was going to ask about the English issue. I wasn't sure France 24 was in English, but
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, they have an English feed. Some cable companies have it, but it's on YouTube. The one that a lot of people don't get in this country, though, is Al Jazeera English. They are amazing. They are really, really good. Just watch their coverage for a day and argue with me about that, because they really
are. Yeah, and I did watch some of their coverage in Paris. They had that on the TV in the hotel room, which was really...
Uh-huh.
That's the advantage of having... having stations that are in different places, they have bureaus there, they have entire channels dedicated to those local languages. And
you know, that's what I mean when I say, you know, we watch a multitude of different media outlets. They're not all coming from the same place. They're coming from all over. They have different backgrounds and perspectives. And if you get the same basic story from all of them, I'd say that's pretty close to truth. That's pretty close to what's actually happening, as opposed to just believing blindly what some state-sanctioned network is telling you.
Or you know, or like me, I walk into my local pizza place, which is also a bar, and it's just a place where people go to get Fox News pushed into their head.
Oh, Lord.
So I stopped going there because I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
With it.
Yeah, that's a statement. You know, you have to express yourself somehow. And I wouldn't go anywhere that has that kind of propaganda just being pumped out all the time. Alex?
Yep.
It seems so unfortunate, caller, that they have Fox News playing. It sounds like it should be an otherwise really fun place. I mean, a pizza and a bar together? Sounds great.
Yeah, it's funny. It's, you know, well, alcohol and anger go together, so. Yeah.
Sure, sure does seem that way. But, you know, there are worse. You know, Fox News is bad, but there's OAN and there's Newsmax.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just unbelievable that people buy into this crap. I mean, they're basically parroting the same thing that Russian state TV is saying about how, you know, Ukraine is a Nazi regime and that they're building all kinds of chemical warfare capabilities. And yeah, you know, it's basically widely believed that the reason that, you know, Russian propagandists are saying this is because they want to be able to justify using chemical weapons themselves by saying that it was about to be used on them or a fake attack would actually be from them in the first place.
And we can be critics.
And we'll have people parodying it here soon, right away.
Yeah.
And we have to make the distinction between the punditry and the actual like news divisions of those companies. I know Fox News had a reporter that was killed.
Yeah.
That was there. And hey, you know, content, critical theory aside, whatever the kind of reporting and how it was framed, whatever that was like, we're on team journalism here, and essentially the ability to go to a place and operate freely as a journalist is something that I think everybody is on side for in this particular scenario, because it's so critical in the moment, and regardless of perspective, we are for the type of societies that allow journalism to exist.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the journalism gets a bad rap here. You know, the January 6th crowd really hates reporters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they're doing the people's work. This is, you know, everyone hates their journalists, but they are mentioned in the Constitution. You know, everyone likes to, you know, the Second Amendment crowd likes to beat on about that Second Amendment. The First Amendment and the press are in there well before that's mentioned. So, you know, let's take it as a whole.
Absolutely. Like, as a photographer, there are situations where you can go to a place with a camera and people are amazed. They're thrilled. You're doing something really interesting. They want to know all about it. They are happy to have to be in a photograph or totally welcoming and interested in whatever you're doing. There are places when you can bring a camera or a certain type of camera and or a microphone, and you get a totally different reaction. And I think that's something that people involved in media, they're kind of like, they're game for it. They're not doing it so that they can be lauded and loved everywhere they go. And vice versa, when they're beat up upon constantly, you have to kind of appreciate that they are there in moments when you're trying to get the story.
Yeah, and honestly, since I started, I do IT work, but since I started working with journalists, it's become one of my charities. That I give to is, you know, journalists overseas facing real threats, you know, covering certain topics, turning up dead family members. So you can research a number of journalist charities that protect the freed
CPJ,
expression of journalism.
CPJ is one of them. The Committee to Protect Journalism, a fantastic organization. So yeah, just so cool that we're able to talk about different sources we like, and there's good and bad in any industry, and media is no exception.
Yeah, and you know the journalists themselves, you know, I don't really have a problem even if they reach different conclusions. It's the personalities, the ones that have, you know, entertainment factor, is basically what they're all about. They're not journalists, but they pretend to be. And I think, you know, even Fox News has their journalists. Yes, we see that, but they're overshadowed so much.
They don't get enough.
No.
Yeah.
They could be so much better.
Anyway, you think about Tucker Carlson, basically praising these people who ended up killing a colleague of his.
I know.
It's disgusting.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, you have to nurture, you have to grow your investigative and your talent pool in the realm of reporting, not grow your personalities and brands and all of this stuff that's really commercial. And it's not actually in the spirit of the type of reporting that people expect in an institution like that.
Anyway, a really great.
Well, I wonder if that type of reporting exists after this going forward. I mean, are we turning out new journalists on a big enough number to cover the news in the future, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like we have shortages everywhere, and that's, you know, if you were to look and talk to your guidance counselor, they're going to tell you not to go into journalism. There's no money there.
Of course,
there is. It just really makes me I'm terrified for the future of what this looks like.
Well, also,
on this current trajectory.
Think about what we're seeing right now. I think journalism is really getting a boost as far as what they're bringing to the table. And I hope that inspires a lot of people to actually get involved in this.
The individuals in the industry themselves finding purpose is as important as being supported and as a career path and so on. And I know as when I was studying, it was either, journalism or PR. And we have a lot more PR and probably too much PR right now. Mm-hmm. So I think that, there has to be, it starts with the local papers. You got to have these like venture funds that are buying them all up. You have to stop that. And flipping publications, they don't have the interests of reporting and independence and the spirit. They just are looking for a quick buck and move on to something else. It's predatory and it's wrong, and that's what happens when you disintegrate those local bureaus. It becomes consolidated and almost irreversible in some situations. And the streaming and social aspect that we're seeing in this war coverage is new. I don't know that it can replace it, but it's certainly augmenting what is missing.
I'm hoping that we're at a stage where we start to realize the value of true journalism. Newspapers, radio, television, the people who go out there and report the stories, and not try and make every blogger the same thing as you know, every Walter Cronkite. It's there's a world of difference, and I hope that we start to remember that. Anyway, listen, really great hearing from you again. Welcome back. Any closing thoughts that you have for us?
No, I think I'm halfway through an article I have to send to you if you want to print it.
Oh, please,
yes. I haven't written anything in forever.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna try to get away from the family and hit a 2600 meeting next week. So
awesome.
We'll see.
All right. Well, best of luck on both of those endeavors.
Thanks for listening and chatting with us.
Yes. Good to have you out there. Take care.
I'll talk to you again.
Yeah. And that's going to do it for calls tonight because we're it's 19 after 9.
It's time for our drink, right?
Yeah, we need to bust a bottle of something out. But wait, you know, somebody mentioned the Second Amendment. I just want to close with this. Turns out the National Rifle Association, those people who imagine that they are in favor of the Second Amendment when actually all they do is distort it. The NRA has confirmed it was the subject of a ransomware attack that took place last October. That's according to a report from Gizmodo. The attack brought the NRA's network down for 2 weeks. Yeah, in a filing to the Federal Election Commission, the organization's Political Action Committee explains the NRA experienced a ransomware attack on October 20th, 2021, that brought its network offline for 2 weeks. Since the NRA wasn't able to access email or network files until the second week of November, the NRA failed to report nearly $2,500 worth of donations, which was the reason for the file. That seems a little low, doesn't it? That they they were down for 2 weeks and they only got $2,500 worth of donations in that period of time.
Was that to help them?
I don't understand. Last year, a Russian cyber criminals group that goes by the name of Grief took credit for allegedly hacking the NRA and posting what appeared to be stolen documents on the dark web. You see, this shows you that there are good people in Russia. There's hacking going on all over the place, but you know, the bad guys are always taken down by somebody. Grief, which is said to be associated with well-known Russia-based hacking group Evil Corp, our old friends, threatened to release more documents if their payment threshold wasn't met. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of ransomware, but I am a big fan of making the NRA pay however you can. So more power to them. Nobody knows, though, if the NRA ever actually did pay up, but they're pretty much going down in flames one way or another. And that was, yeah, that's a little tie-in to the Second Amendment, to Russia, to hackers. It's tied up in a neat bow there. Well, what do you think, Alex?
Yeah, well, look, it could be interesting to look at, you know, large payments of Bitcoin going from one place to another on certain dates, if you can narrow it down to October. I remember when there was suspicion of this. But I have a question for you guys, and I'm wondering if you might know the answer to this. But, you know, why do you think it is that so many NRA members wear sleeveless shirts?
Maybe they get tangled up in the sleeves when they're trying to put them on. I don't know.
I think it's because they believe they have the right to bear arms.
No, I don't think that's it. No, it's a different reason. I don't think that's the right reason. No, I don't think no.
Sleeveless shirts, bare arms.
Why would they want bare arms? You know, do they get cold in the wintertime? No, I think you're 100% wrong on that. I think it's probably, it might be a style thing. It might be that they just want more freedom of movement. Like if they wave their arms around, like, you know, a windmill, that kind of thing. Or hold on a second, tattoos. Yeah, there you go. People have tattoos on their upper arms, and if you're wearing a sleeve, you don't see it. So this is a way of showing that off. That's the reason. That's the reason.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, there's, you know, I was trying to make an NRA joke, and I, you know, took
go
it
ahead,
seriously.
Please. I love NRA jokes.
Well, that was the joke. Why do the members wear sleeveless shirts?
Why do they wear sleeveless shirts?
Bare arms.
Oh, we just went over this, Alex, for God's sake. Bare arms, that's the wrong approach. Okay. You know what? We'll talk afterwards. We'll sort this out.
How about this one?
But you know, I want to hear this joke. If you ever tell me the joke, I want to hear it. I'm sorry. What's that?
Oh, no. I was just saying that there's a distinction. There are Russian hackers, uh-huh, and there are Russian state hackers.
And there are hackers who are in a rush. I get it. That's
and
funny.
There are
That's how you tell a joke.
That are a Russian.
Uh-huh. See? You should take notes, Alex.
I think we should just take another phone call.
We're done with phone calls. We've disconnected the phone. The phone has been unplugged.
Silly after-hours jokes time.
Yeah.
All right. Well. We are done for the night. Thank you, everybody. Write to us, oth@2600.com. Please send us stories and feedback and criticism, whatever you feel like.
Great show. Great talking to everybody. Everybody who called. Yeah. Good to see you, Alex, and go back and forth on this stuff and delve into all these stories. There's so much going on. So please write us, as you said.
And all the listeners have next Wednesday off, so do something fun. You know, you're not obligated to us anymore. You can go outside and do something different.
Or find some sanctioned seized assets somewhere.
There
you
go. That is a good thing to do.
All of the tools, all of the information is out there. You just have to go get it.
And we'll talk about Dead Horse Bay more next week over in Brooklyn.
Yeah, whatever that was all about. Alex, I have to ask you, and this is unprofessional to do this on the air, but I have to ask you to let us know when we're out, because the person who usually does that is not here this week. So I'm going to hit the right buttons, and then you're just going to say, okay, we're done, and then we can communicate off air. All right, folks, oth@2600.com is our email address. Have a good 2 weeks. See you in April.